We are reading about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's conversation with Sri Ramananda Rai. And in this conversation, there's going to be, we're sort of in the middle of it, but there's going to be a progression in the different stages of God realization. This is what's described in the previous chapter. There's chapter 8, and the previous chapter was, of course, chapter 7. There was the beginning of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's traveling preaching tour was described. And in that tour, Mahaprabhu was mostly in a very internal mood, very internally absorbed. And that absorption caused him so much ecstasy, because that absorption was fully devoted thoughts about Krishna. So not very much of the internal mood is described in parts of Chaitanya Charitamrita, in Madhyalila after the Rathyatra, and then at the end of Chaitanya Charitamrita, it describes, Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami describes what is he actually internally absorbed in. But mostly we hear that he is internally absorbed, especially when he's traveling and preaching. And that ecstasy that he was experiencing was so shocking. As if, I don't know if you've ever had the wonderful experience of touching an electric wire that was hot, that was on. Or, I mean, if you've ever lived on a current farm or rural community, they have electric wires to keep the cows and the horses in. And if you happen to touch one of those, it's quite a shocking experience. And it jolts one. So, practically speaking, when the people came in touch, when Mahaprabhu was traveling, came in touch with him and his ecstasy, which meant, practically speaking, being in touch with his consciousness, they were jolted. But it wasn't an unpleasant jolt, as is touching an electric wire, but it was the most pleasant of experiences. It's enlightening experience. It's because it's touching a different realm, the realm that we wish we were in and are trying to act in as if we are in that spiritual world while being in the material world. But of course we can't. But it's a different level of consciousness. And by touching that, they were so attracted, and that consciousness is fully ecstatic, and it's full of devotional love, it's full of bhakti. So when Mahaprabhu was traveling, he described in a general way or in a specific way what he did generally. So he was internally absorbed, he was always chanting, he was ecstatic. And then when he met the Brahmana named Korma, he instructed him to stay where you are. Don't worry so much about making an external change in your life, changing the externals of your circumstance, but rather do the things that make the internal change, and then perhaps gradually an external change will come. But these are the things that you should do that will elicit an internal change And the basic thing was you chant Hare Krishna, stay in your current circumstance, family circumstance or whatever, and just chant Hare Krishna, and you hear the Bhagavatam. And not only that, you should help others. That's what you hear in the Krishna Gita, the instructions that Krishna gives in the Bhagavad Gita, or Krishna Dwapayana Vyas gives in the Srimad Bhagavatam. You teach others that. Chant Hare Krishna, you hear about the instructions of Krishna consciousness, and you tell others, preach. And basically, Mahaprabhu gave the same instruction, which comes at the end of the chapter, to Vasudev, the leper. So one may think, well, that's the end of everything. Mahaprabhu said this, that you should do this. So there's nothing more than that. But here in the following chapter, in chapter 8, in the discussions of Ramananda Roy, that's the first step that Ramananda Roy, like the cloud pouring water upon the sea that the cloud got its rain, its water from, Ramananda Roy will say that you should that this is an instruction that Lord Brahma gave, that you just stay in your situation and you chant and you hear, and in this way, ajita-dito, that the unconquerable supreme, he is conquered by a person who takes to this process of hearing and chanting. So when Ramananda Roy said that to Mahaprabhu, Mahaprabhu accepted. This is the first step that he actually accepted from Ramananda Roy, if you remember. But yet, much more, many more rungs of the ladder have to be climbed if one wants to get to the ultimate. So in this conversation, Ramananda Roy was asked by Mahaprabhu, what is the ultimate realization, not what is the first step, even though that first step is wonderful. So that first step led to the second step, to practicing the rules and regulations in serving Krishna, then to spontaneous devotion. And last week we also read about dasyaras, or the foundational relationship with Krishna is that we are Krishna's servants. And constitutionally, who we actually are, that's who we are. We're Krishna's servants. We're servants. Krivera, Surupoy, Krishna, Nityadas. This is who we are. And we're not in the material world, no one is acting as if they were servants of the, not no one, but few souls, few people are acting in that way. Rather, everyone is acting or trying to arrange their lives as if they were the supreme, as if they were the central figure in existence. And it is a very frustrating life because of that. And even if you manage to organize a good life, you're going to get kicked out from it. It means that no one can stay here forever in the material, in a material circumstance, in a material body, or any material circumstance, practically speaking. Things are always shifting and changing. So servitorship, which no one wants to serve, everyone wants to be master, but servitorship is what everyone ends up doing, so that one should take that natural, unavoidable position of serving and serve Krishna. And when one is perfect in that, one can be in the spiritual world as one of Krishna's servants in the spiritual world. And above that, which was what we read last week, is friendship with Krishna. So what's the difference between friendship and servitorship? Friendship and servitorship is between a higher, the master, and the servant, who who is lower, and the servant can have somewhat of a friendly relationship, but there's always the barrier of the fact that you're higher and I'm in a lower position. But in friendship, there is an equality in the dealings in friendship. There is an equality means that more intimacy is allowed. So I don't remember if we read this verse last week, but this is in the 10th canto, the 11th chapter, perhaps. Itam satam brahma sukhan abhutya tasyam gatanam paradaivatvena mayashritanam naradarakena sadam vijaru krita punja punja. That same absolute truth, who is the source of the Brahmasukhya, the happiness that people are performing austerities for and they desire to become one with, that same absolute truth, Krishna, who everyone is worshiping and serving, that same absolute truth, who those who are really covered by Maya deny the existence of. These cowherd boys are just playing with the source of everything. And it's important to remember what we mean when we're talking about Krishna or the absolute truth at this point, is that he's the source of everything. Just think of what everything is, encompasses. Just look up at the stars in the sky at night and just see the countless number of stars. And if you look at the intricacies of every single material thing, whether it's the wood stand or the microphone or the carpet or the air, it's so intricate. What to speak of a material body, it's so intricate because the material body, there's cells, and inside the cells are like the most such complicated and integrated systems. Are there with the DNA and the RNA and the messenger RNA and because the DNA can't duplicate itself and it needs the messenger. It's just so intricate and complicated. And he's the source of everything, not only the intelligence behind it, making the sun rise and the moon rise on schedule, the clouds come in the sky and the season and the water and the ocean only goes up to a certain point. And the fish live in just everything. He's the source of everything. The material source, in the sense of the ingrediential source, he's the ingredients. Where does all this come from? Where does all this matter come from? All the stuff that the universe is made of on its different levels, because we see it on this level, and then there's the atomic particle level, and then there's the subatomic particle level, and then there's the it depends on what point of view you have. And there's what are the subatomic particles? What constitutes them? Some people say it's these strings of energy that vibrate. But where does all this come from? And where does it come from? Who organized it? Who makes it work? How does it work? Does it work just by chance? Is anything ordered to work by chance? No, there has to be power and intelligence behind it. You know, the atheistical answer to that is, you know what they say? Because I saw this one, I didn't see it in person, but many years ago I saw this video of a theistical physics teacher. He was telling of an exchange he had from one of his atheistical university colleagues. And he said, after studying the universe, I see there can be only two alternatives. One is that there's a creator, a God, and the other is the multiverse. And the multiverse means there's so many universes and just one by chance happens to be one that has all this order and the rest are all chaotic and disorderly, perhaps. But it's just another chance theory. Just this one just happens to be the one that all the pieces fit together. And of course, there's countless. So if you take countless, countless, countless universes, so yeah, one happened to be like this, then the rest, there's no life, there's no order, there's no anything like that. That we happen to have landed in the one that works the way we want it to work. So then the, such an unscientific answer, actually. There's no, you can't prove that by science, that there's countless universes. Not scientific, actually. Metaphysical, perhaps, but not scientific. So the theistical fellows said to him, professor said, well, if there's two choices, why do you make the choice that it's that there's no God? And he replied, why do you make the choice that there is a God? So why do we make the choice? Did we ever... There's no science to prove it. There's no experiment to prove that there is no God. But there's certainly a lot of experience that we have that every single thing that has order, does a cloth just come into existence? Does this wooden, does a microphone, does the carpet, does the hair on our heads or whatever, or the non-hair on our heads, depending upon our stage in life, where does this all come from? There's no experience of just things popping into existence in an ordered way with no intelligence and no power behind it. If you have intelligence but no power, you could say everything should be like this, and we all tend to do that with, you know, this is how it should be, and this is how it should be, and this is how it should be. But it doesn't mean anything because no one has the power to enforce it. And if you can enforce everything, but you don't have the intelligence, very dangerous. So that Supreme Lord, who's the source of everything, there he is in the forests of Vrindavan, herding the cows, and he's playing with his friends. So what? And he's playing just like as if they were ordinary friends. They push each other, they share the lunches, they fight, they play, they make each other cry, they swim together, they make politics amongst each other, teams, and one goes against the other, and then the sides change. They play different types of games as they're herding the cows. And they're playing and swimming in the Jamuna and climbing Govardhan Hill. And yet they're... This Supreme Lord, who's so powerful that universes, not chairs, but universes come from him. And that's nothing. Because there are countless universes. And they're just playing with him as if they were the friends on an equal level. So how do they get into that position to do that with so much love, with so much affection? So this verse says, "Sadam vicharu krita punya punya." That how many countless births of piety, spiritual piety, of attempts to become spiritually advanced, and then meeting your limitations, and then taking another birth, and then trying again, and getting through that limitation, and then taking another birth, and serving, and serving, and serving, and trying again, and trying again, and each time we're getting a little bit closer to the kind of character, the kind of mood that allows one to serve with devotion. So after Krita Punja, after so many births, just imagine how many births it took these cowherd boys to be on a level of purity, be on a level of devotion, be on a level of detachment from matter, be on a level of love for Krishna, be on a level of... That's all that they desire, is to be with Krishna. How long did it take? That's the point that Srila Sukadev Goswami is making. Oh, to achieve this fortune that is so rare, to be in that proximity, that closeness to the Supreme Lord, and have such an intimate relationship with him. Oh, this is wonderful. This is sakiras. The tasting sweetness of one's friendly relationship with Krishna. So here's the translation of that verse. Neither those engaged in the self-realization of appreciating the Brahman effulgence of the Lord, nor those engaged in devotional service while accepting the Supreme Personality of Godhead as Master, nor those under the clutches of Maya thinking the Lord is an ordinary person, because one can look at the cowherd boys and Krishna playing and say, well, that just looks like kids in the schoolyard or something like that. They're just playing. So Krishna's ordinary, but he's not ordinary. He's extraordinary. The universe is, as we were describing first, they emanate from him. So thinking the Lord is an ordinary person, none of them can understand that certain exalted personalities, after accumulating volumes of pious activities, are now playing with the Lord in friendship as cowherd boy. So when Mahaprabhu heard this from Ramananda Roy, he said, this statement is very good, but please proceed even further. Tell me more. I want to hear something even more high than this. Higher means relationships that is more intimacy. And Ramananda Roy then replied, Vatsalya Prem Sarva Sadhyasa, loving service to the Lord in the parental relationship is the highest perfectional stage. Here's Prabhupada's short purport. The stage of loving service to the Lord in parental affection is an advanced stage of love and fraternity. It is more intimate. It's more advanced paternal relationship. In the fraternal relationship, in the friendly relationship, there's a sense of equality. But when that sense of equality is advanced in affection, one attains the platform of parental love. In this connection, the following verse is cited from Srimad Bhagavatam 10.8.46, where Sukadev Goswami voices his appreciation of Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda's intense love for Krishna. Nandakim makaro brahman sre eva mahodayam Yashodava mahabhaga papao yasya stanam mari. Ramananda Roy continued, O Brahmana, What pious activities did Nanda Maharaj perform by which he received the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna as his son? So the cowherd boys perform pious activities for so many births, but yet more intimately related than the friendship that they have with Krishna is Mother and Yashoda's mother, Yashoda Nanda Maharaj's. Their intimacy with Krishna is even greater. So even more piety is there of a different kind. So what pious activities did Nanda Maharaj perform for which he received the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna as his son? What did he do to get that? What does one have to do to get into these positions in the spiritual world? Is there anything one can do? You can't do something. Like if you want a position in this world, you want to become some kind of a minister or a member of parliament or rise up in the ranks in politics or something like that, or rise up in the ranks of business, you have to have, first of all, a very intense desire, and then you have to act in such an intelligent way, and then you have to work so hard, and you have to use your money very carefully, and you have to work, and you have to use your influence, the people that you meet on the way, to get what you want. And that doesn't work for the spiritual path, because if you because matter doesn't matter in and of itself. So we can't use the same means that help us materially advance. We can in one level, but as a general statement, we can't use the same means. There has to be something different, and that something different on the spiritual level to spiritually advance is bhakti. And then all those material things can be used when they're coded with bhakti. Bhakti means devotion, because Krishna has no need of anything else. Dhanmai swaya shukta shibhira namanamana pramod na eva arhati gatumbai toma kinshinavoshana. Krishna doesn't need anything of this world. He's already Atmarama, the Supreme. He's already, universes are coming from him. What can we give him? But what we can give him is what he wants from us, is just some devotion, some affection. And not that he doesn't have enough people giving him devotion and affection, but that's the method. If we have some devotion and some affection, then we can please him with that, because that's the essence of what gives pleasure. Not consuming material things doesn't give pleasure, but it's the affection that gives us the pleasure in life. And if one doesn't have affectionate dealings, one can naturally be quite lonely and disconcerted. And Jagarupada was telling me that he was taking care of an, I was going to say elderly person, but the elderly person was so much younger than me, I don't even want to say elderly person, but he was like 60 years old or something like that. And he had to move from one place to another, and he was getting his own apartment, and he was just moving all his possessions into his small, very small apartment. And there he was going to be, not knowing anyone, all alone. And basically, he was explaining that it's quite a lonely life. So it is the affectionate dealings that really give life to a life. So what type of activity does Nanda Maharaj do to be able to have the natural affectionate relationship with the all-attractive Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna as a son? And what pious activities did Mother Yashoda perform that made the Absolute Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna call her mother and suck her breast? This is the affectionate nourishment, it's the affection of the mother in the form of her breast milk that nourishes the child. And then the next verse, also from the Bhagavatam. The favor Mother Yashoda obtained from Sri Krishna, the bestower of liberation, was never obtained even by Lord Brahma or Lord Shiva, or even by the goddess of fortune, who always remains on the chest of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So as Prabhupada says in the purport, this is another appreciation made by Sukadeva Goswami and his narration of the pastimes of Krishna. Appreciation of Mother Yashoda. How fortunate. That Mother Yashoda had so much love for Krishna that he allowed her to bind her after he had acted in a naughty way by breaking the milk pots and feeding the butter to the monkeys. And Mother Yashoda allowed the unlimited Lord, or Krishna, the unlimited Lord, allowed himself to be bound by the affectionate upsetness of Mother Yashoda. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, reacted to this, Prabhu Kahe, Eya Uttaman, this is certainly Age Kaheya, this is certainly wonderful, and your statements are getting better and better, but I want to hear something more. So Rai Kahe, Namaranda Roy said, Kanta Prema Sava Sadhyasa, and the relationship, the loving relationship between lover and beloved, this is the essence of all perfection. So here is Prabhupada's translation. Your statements are certainly getting better and better one after the other, but surpassing all of them is another transcendental mellow, another rasa, another exchange between Krishna, the Supreme Lord, and the dearest devotees. And you can speak of that as the most sublime Kanta Prema, the loving service between the lover and beloved, or husband and wife. This is the highest perfection. So Ramananda Roy said, conjugal attachment for Krishna is the topmost position and love of Godhead most intimate. So he's accepting all of these one by one as better and better and better, but still he's acknowledging each one has its own perfection, is perfect. So let's see if there's any questions at this point. If not, we shall continue. Any questions? What do you think of this? That's my question. If you don't have a question, follow up question. Yeah.
It's a general one?
Huh?
General one?
General question?
Hmm?
General question. What's a general question? You mean not about this?
No. Everything you've said so far makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah.
Can I ask a general question?
Okay.
And when one falls down from the spiritual world, it ends be always involved.
Yes.
To fall down without him.
There has to be a turning. Krishna Bhule says even Adi Bhagamukta, there has to be some turning of ourself from Krishna, from our relationship with Krishna.
But enmity is always.
There has to be some enmity with Krishna that I don't want to participate in his lila. I want to have my own lila. Why should I have a supporting role? I want to be the star. There's something like that in there. Of course, it's not possible to really understand it from the conditioned stage. But yeah, there has to be some enmity. Enmity means, why him? I remember that when I was in the university, I got a copy of the Bhagavad Gita, not Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. And I read, that was such, the book was the most incredible thing I ever read. And I read it in one day. But I thought, this is such a wonderful book. But there's one problem. What right does he have to say that he's God? So one may say there's some enmity there or envy. I mean, that was my spontaneous thought. I mean, maybe he can show universal form, but why does he have to say he's God? Aren't we all God or something like that, especially me? I mean, it's, when you think, of course, from the Vaishnava point of view, it's obviously crazy, ludicrous to think like that. But it's the situation.
Who are the devotees in Dasya Bhava in Vrindavan? Also, you mentioned that Rasa means there's some friction and charming.
Last time. There has to be, not it's transcendental friction and transcendental journey for Rasa to take place.
So I'm just curious, so devotees who are in Dasya Bhava, is that involved? But not for, as for my understanding, there's no journey with the Hanuman and the Lord. So, not for Vrindavan. What's the example?
With this churning between Hanuman and Ravana. So because of love, you have done something to my master. This is intolerable. It's intolerable. It has to be some opposition or some, otherwise it's flat. It has to be something that makes the emotions, that it generates emotion. Therefore, it's Bhakti Rasa Amrita Sindhu. It's an ocean. And there's Baba Sandhi, there's the waves. There has to be waves in an ocean. It's not flat. And we're meant to swim in that ocean instead of this ocean. So, yes, there are servants of Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
There's one servant carries Krishna's flutes, and maybe Krishna has 100 flutes when he's out in the forest. And he's expert at knowing which flute to hand to Krishna according to the circumstance. Because different circumstances require different flutes. Some are used to call the cows, some are used to make the trees blossom, some are used to this and that, different size flutes. So he carries the flutes, so he has to, there's a tent, what does Krishna want? It's not just meditating on Krishna, so wonderful, he's so beautiful. As soon as you want to serve in any way, there's always going to be some tension, whether it's in the, you want to do something, it's an activity. So as soon as there's activity, there has to be a force opposing that activity. In the spiritual world, in the material world. So we'd like the material world to be free from anything that opposes us, but it doesn't work that way. So therefore, what do people do in reaction to the fact that they don't like things opposing them is they just want to be nothing, basically, and don't do anything, and that way nothing opposes you. That gets pretty boring. Yeah, so the devotees, like when the cowherd boys saw Agasura, that one verse that Kritya Punja Punja was in the 12th chapter of the 10th Kirtan. So later on in that chapter, Kamsa had sent one demon by the name of Agasura to kill Krishna and kill the boys. And that way, Agasura was thinking that if I kill these boys and kill Krishna, I'll destroy all of Braja because it's the children that will give life to the village. So such a way of thinking, such a demonic way of causing pain. So anyway, he took the form of a great snake, python, and he sat on the road and he opened up his mouth and he was so huge that his tongue appeared to be a road. And his eyes appeared to be something, and his teeth were like part of a cave, a stagum. What are they called? Which are the ones? Some go up and some go down.
Yeah, my wide open mouth is just like a cave. Soon it will be Krishna's grace.
Wow! That's horrible, Premananda Prabhu. Where did you learn this? That's a kid's song.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yes.
So the boys, when they first saw it, they said, oh, what a wonderful cave this is. And boys, they like to play. And the Vrindavan Forest was always very expert at presenting newer and newer things every day. It's not like this, going to the same place. It was always, that's what the, some of the services are, to make the forest newer and fresher. So there's always variety. So they walked. So they thought, oh, this is a great cave. And then one of the boys said, this doesn't look like a cave to me. It looks like a great snake. Look, those stalagmites, what are they called?
Tights are the ones that go down.
The tights? What's the...
Stalagmites are the ones that come up. I think that's correct.
Is that correct?
That's right.
It's either one way or the other. It depends which way you look at it, whether you're standing on your head or standing on. So he said, look, those stalagmites and stalagmites. And its teeth, and it's, that's not a road, that's his tongue. And he has his mouth open so wide, it appears that he wants to swallow us all up, lure us inside and swallow us up. And they, the boy said, anyway, Krishna will save us. So their mood was, this is going to be so exciting. We'll be in danger and be saved by Krishna again. And there's such a feeling when you're saved by someone. There's such a feeling of love and appreciation. So they wanted to experience that love and appreciation of Krishna. He's such a hero. Our friend Krishna is such a hero. So they just started to walk in, laughing and playing their instruments and just dancing and playing with the calves and the calves. And Krishna was there, and he, using his power naturally, because how could he want his friends to walk into such a dangerous situation, the mouth of a snake? How could he want that? How could he allow it? So he was using his power to stop it. Them from walking in. And yet they were walking in. And Krishna was amazed that, because the way that the spiritual world works isn't that, it's not like Krishna controls everything and conscious of everything, because then life wouldn't be very much fun in the spiritual world for Krishna if he knew everything, controlled everything. Yeah, it wouldn't be pleasurable. So he empowers his energies to make all the decisions so everything can be fresh and surprising and new for him. So he's standing there amazed that the coward boys, against his will, the Supreme Lord's will, are walking into the mouth of this great serpent. And what amazes him is that the controller of Vrindavan, the yoga maya that controls Vrindavan, his empowered potency, has not taken his side to fulfill his desire, but rather it is taking the side of the coward boys, because they want to see, have the experience of being saved by Krishna. So he's amazed. He said, okay. So he goes into the mountain. And he expands himself and kills Agasura. But this is the spiritual world. And this is how powerful the coward boys are. And still more powerful is Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj, because they can control Krishna. Krishna is actually afraid of Mother Yashoda, because her love is so strong that it controls him. So after she tied him up, Mother Yashoda tied him up when he was acting so naughty, because in the previous chapter, in chapter 8, he had stolen the butter, and all the ladies in the neighborhood who were stolen from, they came and complained about him. And Mother Yashoda wouldn't chastise him at all. He sat there in such an innocent way, looking so sweet, smiling, moving closer to her, so, you know, controlling her by his innocence and his love. And she didn't chastise him. And this, that Krishna wanted the experience of being chastised by his beloved mother. So in the next chapter, he gets very naughty and he breaks the pot, feeds everything to the monkeys. And then she chases him and he's crying and she ties him up to the mortar. And then she tells all the boys, you watch him, make sure he doesn't do anything naughty. Yes. And then she goes, and then Balaram comes. And Krishna's just playing with his friends, even though he's tied up, and then Balaram comes. And then instead of playing, he starts crying immediately. Oh, look at my situation, I'm a victim. Balaram says, who has tied you up like this? I will destroy them. Who has done this to you? I'll destroy them, even if it means destroying the universe. Who has tied you up? And Krishna in his tears says, my mother has tied me up. And the mother says, oh, no. He couldn't untie him. And then he started chastising Krishna himself. Why are you so naughty all the time? You're always acting so reckless and everything like that. He wouldn't untie him. So this is the dealings that are continuously taking place in the spiritual world. They're full of they're full of excitement, they're full of rasa, they're full of tensions, they're full of surprises, they're full of different individuals acting in one way or another. This is the spiritual world. So, and even above them, is the gopis. So, we'll read report to 79, where he says, Kantabhav. Right, Kanta Prema Sarvasatya. Kanta means lover and beloved. Conjugal attachment for Krishna is the topmost position in love of God. So the Prabhupada's purport. In general, love of Godhead is devoid of the intimacy of ownership. Because he's the supreme. You can't think you own him. You think you are owned by him. In the case of love and servitude, there is a want of confidence. There is a want of increased affection in fraternal relationship. And even when this affection increases in the parental relationship, there is nonetheless a want of complete freedom. However, when one becomes a conjugal lover of Krishna, everything lacking in the other relationships is completely manifest. Love of Godhead lacks nothing in the conjugal stage. The summary of this verse is that parental love of God is certainly higher than fraternal love, and that conjugal love is higher yet. It was when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu requested Ramananda Roy to go further that he came to the point of the conjugal relationship, which is the highest perfectional stage of transcendental love. So we'll continue with this, Krishna willing, next week. It gets more and more amazing when this philosophy, this Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy, is explained here by Ramananda Roy, it's explained by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami Maharaj, it's explained by Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, Jiva Goswami, Gopala Bhatta Goswami, when they're all. It's just so, still so amazing. Any other questions? General questions, lieutenant questions, colonel questions, major questions? Yeah.
Just a confirmation. Like a Vrindavan, there's three rushes, and then Vaikut, it's two rushes. Servitude and neutrality in Vaikut, which is like this friendship.
Servitorship, too.
No, the two never move. You can't have. Can you have neutrality in Krishna religion?
No, but there's dasyaras, then there's friendship, sakyaras, and then there's vatsalyaras, parental, and then there's Madhurya, Shringara. So that's four and three. But yet, there is a Shantaras in the spiritual world. But it's not pure Shantaras. It's always mixed with these higher rasas. So the grass would be Shantaras, the water would be Shantaras, the cows are Shantaras, the monkeys, the fruit in the trees. But there's a mixture of servitorship in there. Or in the case of the cows, there's a mixture of parental affection for Krishna. And in the case of the monkeys, there's friendship or something like that. So it's not just neutrality and appreciation. There's always the sweetness of servitude in there, in Goloka Vrindavan. What do you think? You have any questions?
Is there dust in the water everything conscious there?
Everything?
It's living.
Conscious, yeah.
Does that mean that?
Yes.
They
want to serve in that way. Oh, it would be so nice if Krishna steps on me with his lotus feet. That's, of course, it's inconceivable. I mean, why would you want to be water or grass or dust? I mean, you could want something, but it's not a matter of like ambition, material ambition. It's a matter of who you are and being in the place that's natural for you. And we see, you see this with Bhishma Dev. He has Krishna right in front of him, but yet his eternal relationship is not with two armed Krishna, it's with four armed Narayan. Now, how could he have that with Krishna right in front of him? Doesn't he know that Krishna, the relationship with Krishna is? It's not like that. It's svabhavika, it's natural, it's inherent. Self-realization means you become who you are. But yet, it also describes that if you're in one rasa, by mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by association, appreciation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and by the mercy of Goswamis, your rasa could change. It describes this in Chaitanya Charitamrita. One of the purports we can change to Matoyaras, for example. In Brihad Bhagavatamrita, there's a progression of places where Gop Kumar goes, different planets. He's looking for the highest. But actually, he's looking for his own natural place, what's natural for him. So even though he's in the Vaikuntha, even though he's in the Vaikuntha aspect of Goloka Vrindavan, he's not satisfied. So until we are who we are, we won't be satisfied. So we're at home. And then we get home and are in our relationship with Krishna, and then full satisfaction is there, actually ourself. So it's quite astounding. And to me, it's astounding that the thought that all the things I think I am are not actually me. They're just conditioned responses covering me. So it's like wearing someone else's clothes always. It doesn't quite feel right until you put on your own clothes. It's just, so we have to become us. And it's so natural. What do you think?
Inconceivable, the dust is living, the water is living.
And when the And when the water hears Krishna's flute, it becomes, stops flowing. It becomes stunned in ecstasy. And the dust, when Krishna remembers Tango, Rajas, Shri, Tukuntala, that the dust, when Krishna comes home from the forest, he's covered by the dust of Vrindavan. So that dust is happy. It's touching Krishna. And even Uddhava, when he prays that he would like to be, take birth as the Gulmalata, which means like the creepers of Vrindavan, because that way, when the residents of Vrindavan step on it, the dust from their lotus feet will be transferred to himself. So yes, it's inconceivable. I think everything about the spiritual world is inconceivable. It's, we're seeing our concepts of it are shadows only, reflections. There are also devatas, and the demigods in the material world are like reflections, but they're expansions, material expansions of the devatas in the spiritual world. So what is the function of devatas in the spiritual world, but they're there? Cows, how about cows? Is that conceivable? Yes? Little conceivable. What does little conceivable mean? It means inconceivable. I mean, what is a cow in the spiritual world thinking? What is a tree thinking? The conscious means there's thoughts. It's just, and there's separation too. When Krishna comes and leaves the forest, just imagine how attractive Krishna is. Inconceivable, but he's so attractive.
That means there are more than 8,400,000 forms of bones
in the material world. I wonder if there's mosquitoes up there. What do they do? Where do they bite? So that leaves a space. So I don't know. Someone asked Prabhupada one time if there was snow in the spiritual world. And Prabhupada said, yes, but it's not cold. How are you going to fit all these things in? Is that a raised hand of a question? No, it's a raised hand of a pained shoulder.
It's just spitting the line.
Yeah, Hare Krishna. Okay, Hare Krishna. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Ki Jai. Sri Krishna Kaviraj Goswami Ki Jai. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Ki Jai. All the residents of Vrindavan Ki Jai. Nityananda Prabhu Ki Jai.